Adam Mares from DNVR joins us to discuss what the hell is going on with the Denver Nuggets, the leadership of 22-year-old Anthony Edwards, and Sambor feelings, bird watching, owning a bar, and having kids. All that and so much more coming right up on this episode of Divine Intervention. Everybody has plans until they get hit for the first time. John Gennaro, count me in! Today's first words belong to Iron Mike Tyson, who famously spoke them before his 1987 fight against Tyrell Biggs, which Tyson won by TKO in the sixth. But the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get rolling, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone and into that camera. Pretty good deal for your boy. Number two, I'm now comfortable enough in my washedness that I sprung for some new insoles for my sneakers. And honestly, that kind of made trooping through New York City last night on my way to Knicks Pacers and going all throughout Madison Square Garden, the bowels of the arena, feel like a pleasure cruise. So shouts out to being comfortable enough to treat yourself and your feet. And number three, nearly as important as all of that, I get to spend part of my day catching up with a very smart, very kind, very hardworking man who might be in need of a little pick-me-up today. My guest today is someone whose work I first encountered back when he was writing for Denver Stiffs and SB Nation's Denver Nuggets blog, and contributing to Vice Sports. These days, he is the head of content for DNVR Sports, the flagship of the growing All City Network media empire, as well as the host of the All City NBA podcast with Tim Legler, of all people, my goodness, and the proprietor of the DNVR Bar, which is a heck of a place to grab a drink to celebrate a Nuggets win or to drown some sorrows after a Nuggets loss. Friends, a warm welcome for Adam Mares. Adam, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for all of those different plugs there. But the DNVR bar was the saddest place on earth last night. So, you know, we might have lost a star or two in our reviews.
Well, I believe that the phrase is we suffer together, right?
That's right.
That's the idea. That's right. So we celebrate together, we suffer together. And I appreciate you being here today to do both with me. Adam, this is not what the show that I had thought we were going to be doing when I asked you to come on the show, but I've asked you here today to help me understand what the hell is going on. And I mean that somewhat literally. I was away with family this weekend and I was covering Knicks Pacers last night, as I mentioned. So I hadn't watched like front to back all of both games. And I wake up this morning and it's 2-0 the other way. I think the way that a lot of people didn't anticipate it being in the Denver-Minnesota series. So here to find out from you and to talk through how we got here, where we're going, how you're feeling, if you're staying hydrated, can you confidently identify the location of all of your heating packs? All of it. I want to know about all of it. And we will get into all of it. But first, yeah, as a moment, a matter of course here on Divine Intervention, we always try to operate from a place of joy. And I understand joy might be difficult to come by on this particular morning. However, that only makes finding it all the more imperative. So, Adam Mares, what is something from the world of basketball that's bringing you joy right now?
There's good basketball being played. I'm a basketball purist, Dan. Like, I love the game. I love the game of basketball first. I think I love the Nuggets second, and I love the NBA third. It's almost in that order. So even when the basketball is good, even when my team is on the other end of it, I can still find some kind of joy in it, as sick as that might sound. And honestly, every year there's a team or two that sort of coalesces at the right time and they reach these new heights that even they had never reached before. And right now the Minnesota Timberwolves are that team, and we're not quite at the midway point of the playoffs, but through six dominant games, they look like a team that is coming together, that has a singular belief, a singular goal. They're all pulling in the same direction. And it's really cool to see when that happens. And it's especially cool when it happens to a team that is doing it for the first time and a franchise that is doing it for the first time, including a fan base. So as much as it's coming at my Nuggets' expense, it's pretty cool to see the Wolves' rise in the way that they're coming together.
First off, that is extraordinarily big of you. That is not the kind of answer that a lot of people would be capable of providing on a morning like today. It's also, the narrative discussion has been shot through with all of the points of comparison and the points of overlap between Denver and Minnesota. There is a funhouse mirror component to this, though, of like, this time last year, so many of us were so enraptured by the way the Nuggets played offense, a sort of cohesive unit, and the sort of stuck together organism, like, one, you know, everybody pulling in the same direction and sort of elevating one another, of some that's greater than the whole, a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts, by the way that everybody sort of feeds off of one another. And it does feel a little bit like what you're watching in Minnesota is that on the defensive side of the ball, like, you have and to the point where the NBA's YouTube channel made like a 3.5 minute sizzle reel this morning of Minnesota defensive possessions. I can't remember the last time NBA.com was like, check out these hot defensive rotations.
Right.
But we are here and it's kind of wild. And you're kind and thoughtful to point it out. Let's get to the specifics. Timberwolves 106, Nuggets 80 on Monday night. Minnesota now leads that best of seven series 2-0. They took both games in Denver. They're heading back to Minnesota for game three on Friday. After Minnesota drew first blood Saturday, and with Rudy Gobert missing game two to be there for the birth of his first child, which congratulations to him and his family, you expected the Nuggets to kind of come out on fire, look to rest control the series back. And instead, you know, just like game one, Minnesota takes the lead early and they wind up squeezing with a dominant 33-15 second quarter that kind of put this one away before halftime. Our guy Vinny Goodwill was there in Denver covering the series for Yahoo Sports, and his column, which you should all read, read in part, "The Nuggets looked as primed as any recent champion to break the trend of NBA parity, ready to repeat and along the way earn every benefit. Now all they have are doubts. They're wearing the look of frustration, the look of summer vacation coming a month earlier than they'd planned. They look out of answers." So I want to start there. A week ago, I mean, the world was different, but a week ago, the Nuggets had just finished off the Lakers. How in the space of 7 days have we arrived at the defending champs looking out of answers?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't think that this just goes back a week. And look, that was an unconvincing first round win by the Nuggets. They beat them in five games. They trailed in four of those five in the first quarter by double digits. So all of those games had this thing of, why does Denver keep doing this? And when a team keeps doing something, you know, it happens the first time, you say, okay, they're not taking it seriously. They're not getting off to good starts. And then you start to rationalize and you know, try to make sense of what's happening. But when it happens five games in a row in the same series, at some point you have to think, maybe that's who they are. Maybe they're not as good as we think they are. And that's why they're falling behind all these points. And I think there was a little bit of it there. So I want to start by saying this. The Timberwolves, I think, are the better team. And they are earning this. So anything I say here is not an excuse on Denver's part.
Sure.
It is more contextualizing the Nuggets' season. And there were phrases that were showing with the Nuggets in the final month of the season that, in hindsight, now that you see them unraveling, you go, oh, there it is. Jamal Murray got injured. He missed a bunch of time. Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter, KCP, Nikola Jokic played extra minutes, kind of sprinted down the finish line to kind of make up for the absence of Jamal. And then when he returned with, I think he played six games to end the year, Denver blew a few fourth quarter leads, very uncharacteristic of them, including that game against the San Antonio Spurs, which, if you recall, that cost them the one seed. And when that happens, when that happened, like with round one, everybody said, huh, that's strange. Weird things happen, but that's not who they are. I think it was our first signs that this might actually be who they are, a very good team, but missing what it was that got them over the hump last year. And the Wolves, I think, are designed to exploit any weakness that the Nuggets have, and they've opened up this wound in Denver that is now massive for everyone to see.
And a huge part of that, you know, the smelling blood in the water, as Chris Finch put it after game two, is that Jamal Murray doesn't look like the Jamal Murray we saw throughout last postseason, throughout much of this regular season. You mentioned it. The numbers are kind of glaring. Oof. At this point. He was 3-for-18 from the floor in game two. Let me pull it up here. 9-for-32 in the series, shooting 37.5% from the field and 28.6% from three-point land in the postseason. The Nuggets have been, you know, their bread and butter Murray Jokic two-man game. Whenever they've got those two guys on the floor, they're elite. You know, last year during the playoffs, during the regular season, going back time immemorial, it feels like, through two games against Minnesota, they've been outscored by nearly 30 points per 100 possessions with those two guys on the floor. On some level, is this as simple as, if Jamal Murray isn't Jamal Murray, the Nuggets aren't the Nuggets?
Absolutely. And here's the scary part about that, Dan. Let's go back all the way through this arc. In 2020, they go to the bubble Murray has a good year. Nobody's talking about him as an all-star. Nobody's talking about him in this way. They go to the bubble, and he gets in incredible shape. You're kind of isolated in there. Players went one of two directions inside the bubble. We know a lot of guys just kind of burnt out or what have you. Other guys, and I think Murray is one of them, all he had to do all day was work out, sit in his room, and go to the pool. Like, that was all he could do. And it almost, in a lot of ways, brought out the best of him. And we saw him elevate to this crazy level. The Nuggets come back from 3-1 two times. They go to the Western Conference Finals, and they lose a hard-fought five-game series to the eventual champs. He misses the next 2 years to injury. He comes back, has a mediocre to underwhelming season. And there's some talk of, is Murray even the same guy anymore? Can he do this? He gets in great shape and has an unbelievable playoff run, and the Nuggets win a title. So, and then this year, where he had an underwhelming regular season, got injured a lot throughout the course of the season, including at the very end, and now has been atrocious in the playoffs. So in 5 years, basically the five prime years of this core, you know, we talk about Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter, Michael Malone, of that core, in 5 years, he's been phenomenal in two of them, and they made incredible runs. He's been absent in two of them, and they got bounced early. And he's been atrocious in one, and it looks like they're going to get bounced early again. So to me, I look at the overarching arc here and say, it's very clear that this is Jokic's team with a two-man game dynamic. And if that two-man game is not there, the Nuggets are not a great team at all. In fact, they're an extremely compromised team that got swept by the Suns, lost in five to the Warriors, and is down 0-2 and two blowout right now to the Wolves.
And Murray's, whatever his physical ailments are and whatever the challenges he's battling through, the Wolves, again, as you mentioned at the beginning, sort of deserve top marks for what they are doing to him, picking him up full court, forcing him to deal with the length and the physicality that they bring to bear early and often. You know, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards is the primary point of attack defender, Nikhil Alexander Walker, who's been a monster coming off the bench throughout both the first six games of this playoff run for Minnesota. And you're seeing, there's not the burst off the dribble, but also just whenever he turns a corner, whenever he's able to shed one of those guys, there's two guys in his lap. You know, it's Naz Reid meeting him at the point of attack. It's Kyle Anderson last night starting in place of Rudy Gobert, but being able to be on the help. And listen, length everywhere, this team that Tim Connelly built. And now that you know that Murray's not as much of a danger knocking down, pulling up from mid-range, you don't feel you have to worry about it as much. You're able to contest those without fouling. And he hasn't been in a rhythm for a month now, more than that. Right. They're sitting on that pocket pass too in the two-man game. And you see them getting deflections there, not able to get it through as much. So it's like the Wolves see the opportunity to defang what has been, the most dangerous play in offensive basketball for a couple of seasons. And when you take that away, what does Denver have to turn back to?
Right. 100%. That's exactly it. Is if everything starts from the two-man game and you're able to shut off the two-man game, well, what is the secondary thing? Nothing, because the secondary thing is stuff that comes off of that.
Right.
And nobody had been able to shut it down. The Timberwolves, here's the story, though. Tim Connelly built the Nuggets. He then left in a very dramatic fashion with some very bad blood. You know, there were some barbs on the way out thrown about. You know, he left through the side door. He didn't do things right, this or that. Right. There's some bad blood there. He's the only guy that I think saw the Nuggets coming. When he goes to Minnesota and you look at the landscape, you say, what kind of team do we need to build? Well, who's going to be good? The Denver Nuggets are going to be good. They have a great team, and they were missing Murray, but they're getting him back, and they're going to be good. He makes the Gobert trade, and I know everybody thought it was insane at the time, but length is the only thing. Length on Jokic, multiple bodies on Jokic, bigs, has been the only thing that has slowed him down in the playoffs. That was in the bubble in 2020 with Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis. That three-headed monster is the only thing that's ever made Jokic look mortal in the playoffs. So you get that, and then you have another part of here. Okay, athleticism. Denver, is as long as they have Jokic, is not going to be the most athletic team. Well, he puts athleticism all over the court, and by the way, the Nuggets lose Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. I know Jeff Green doesn't get thrown in there a lot, but one thing Jeff Green is very athletic. He's a very athletic player. So Denver lost two of their most athletic players and now has a hobbled Jamal Murray and a little bit of an older Aaron Gordon and KCP who look run down. They are not athletic, and they are vulnerable now to teams who are athletic. And the third piece of this, and this is where I think Conley's genius, really, you really see how he knew what kind of team he had to build to beat the current top dog. Murray struggles with length, and he struggles with guys that can fight through screens. Nikhil Alexander, while Jaden McDaniel's already on the roster, but Nikhil Alexander Walker, adding him to this team, has been such an important piece of why they are so good out on the perimeter. They have a three-headed monster of Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. You put all of them on the court together or you cycle them through, and you're always going to have on-ball pressure. That was Murray's weakness even when he was fully healthy. Now that he's not fully healthy, he's kind of banged up. It's swarming, and it has completely decapitated the Nuggets' attack, and that's why I think the Wolves have been perfectly designed to exploit the weaknesses of Denver.
It's, I mean, absolutely incredible to think that, and I mean, people like me, so, you know, idiots, looked at the Nikhil Alexander-Walker part of that trade and was like, that's a worthwhile, you know, flyer, right? Like, that's a guy who's, you know, lottery talent, you know, a lot to like there, size, wingspan, you know, that's some pedigree. Yeah, he's washed through a few teams. That's worth a shot. And then, like, you know, a year plus later, it's not like, We're going to remember the Gobert trade because of just the sheer number of assets that went out and how high profile it was and the discourse that surrounded it. The midstream adjustment to it to add Mike Conley and add Nikhil Alexander-Walker is, you know, it's like snapping the last part on the machine and actually fully hums to life. And we're seeing that now. I wanted to get back to the point that you made on Jokic. I believe I'm right on this. I might be wrong. I'm not exactly Stats Williams or whatever, but I think this is the first time that he's shot below 45% from the field in consecutive games all season. Wow. And I think it goes back to your point about this, that there's, even without Gobert there last night, Naz Reid, defensive game of his life, you know, Karl Anthony Towns not getting into bad foul trouble, being able to stay down on the fakes and use the wingspan, the late help coming from all those guys that have all those long arms. It's making Jokic have to try to find different angles to release the shots, 11 turnovers in two games. Have you ever seen, outside of maybe that one Lakers series, Jokic seem this, I don't want to say tentative, because I think he was looking for his offense early last night. He sought opportunities to get shots up. I think he took 9 threes in game one. So it's not like he's being passive in the moment, but it does feel like he's having to take an extra beat, and we're not used to seeing that little hesitation from Jokic.
Well, I think Jokic is a rhythm player. I've compared him to Peyton Manning a lot. You know, he's a guy that, like, when he's reading the court and everything, like, he just picks up a rhythm. When Denver's rhythm gets disrupted, he does have a lot of things he can go to, you know, to kind of settle them. And Denver will obviously go to him on the elbows or the blocks. But what happened in last night's game and what happened all throughout the Lakers series was teams have looked around and said, Denver is compromised. Aaron Gordon is playing below his standard. KCP is below his standard. Jamal Murray is way below his standard. They send the hard double at him. So usually when you go to that stabilizing, okay, Yoke's in the post and let's just let him try to make a tough move against a good defender. You know, he was up for that. Even in game one, he had a lot of good takes on Rudy Gobert when Gobert would get matched up on him. But last night, that wasn't even an option. One, they couldn't get the ball to him half the time. So half the time you're trying to get him the ball. And if they got it to him, there was only 5 seconds on the clock or what have you. So it wasn't even like he was given great moments there. But in the moments when he would get the ball in the post, they would just say, you know what, hard double. Trust our athleticism on the backside to rotate and shut things down. And it worked perfectly. He would get the ball, hard double would come. They would swing it around, but nobody was open. And the way you're open on a swing like that, even against athleticism, hard closeout comes and you have guys that beat them downhill now, get the ball moving and then attack downhill and scramble the defense. Murray clearly does not have that in him right now. He has no bursts of speed. There's no, the closeouts with Jaden McDaniels or Nikhil Alexander-Walker right now, close out and there's no separation. And unfortunately, that's how so I agree with you that Jokic looks a little off rhythm, but part of me looks at this and goes, the team is so compromised that I'm not even sure what he can do. I think defensively there's a lot he can do, but offensively, I don't even know what a lot there is he could do other than force bad shots, which is not really a recipe I see winning the game either.
It's so funny because it's the exact argument in my, again, the idiot's brain about why I thought that the Wolves were going to struggle with the Suns was that they were going to force Anthony Edwards to get off it with aggressive help, hard doubles, and then trust those other guys to make shots, make plays. And in the regular season, you saw that in those matchups, Nikhil Alexander-Walker didn't shoot great. Jaden McDaniels didn't shoot great. Karl Towns got into foul trouble, didn't shoot great. So all those other guys weren't rewarding the trust. And then it's, well, if they're not rewarding the trust, how long does the trust last? In round one, they absolutely, you know, reward the trust. Game one against the Nuggets, not so much, but Ant just goes to supernova, 43 points, and is able to overcome it. You see it again last night. Ant making the simple pass when the double comes his way and trusting, you know, Towns gets into a rhythm early or on those swings. Jaden McDaniels finally gets a couple of buckets early and that opens things up for him, even though he doesn't score very much, but just keeps him in rhythm, keeps the ball moving, so on and so forth. It was like sometimes the difference between who's the best player in the series is how much the other guys are supporting them and making them look good for their good decisions, right? Like Jokic is the best player on the floor whenever he steps onto it, but he can be overtaken in the series when everybody else rises to Ant's level. And I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing so far. So to that point, where do you see that support coming from for Jokic down the balance of the series?
I don't. And that's part of why the series doesn't feel great, you know, in the moment that you're in. I don't know that Murray has it in him to overcome this year. You know, he's risen to the occasion, as we just mentioned, in the years that he's been healthy, but he's underperformed in the regular season to expectation. And there's always been if he ever lets us down in the playoffs, then we'll have the conversation about just how good is he? Is he the guy that you should commit to? So this is uncharted territory because it's the first time that's happened. But we're, what is this, 7 games in now? Yeah, 7 games into the playoffs. Murray does not have a good game. He does not have a good game. He has two good quarters. And so at a certain point, you look at that and say, so is he going to be better now on the road? By the way, first of all, is he going to play in Game 3? As you mentioned earlier, he threw a little heat pack on the thing. That's also uncharted territory because NBA players don't generally stoop to that, you know, level of frustration. So there's a chance he doesn't even play. But even if he does, you saw the impact that defense had on him. He does not look like a guy that is this close to overcoming it. And so, no, I don't see them getting a respite from this, or Jokic getting a respite from him. And then let me just bring this point up here, Dan, and I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, the disease of more, you know, everybody talks about you win a championship, do people want more? I don't think Denver's been affected by that, you know, the wanting more. I think guys have actually sacrificed. But there's another element of continuity is great, but the thin line between continuity and getting stale or just getting tired of each other and this or that. I wonder, as I watch these first two games and see the body language and see the frustration, even with players, Jokic's passivity, I look at this and I go, this team might be annoyed of each other. They might actually be at the point, and credit the Wolves for bringing it out of them fully and putting it on display, but they didn't show a lot of fight in the second half of that game, despite, you know, I know it felt hopeless, but they didn't show a lot of fight for each other. And that's where, like, when we're talking about teams that coalesce in the playoffs, the Wolves look like if one of their guys is down, they would all come to pick them up and be like, hey, we'll save you. Last night, the Nuggets looked like they didn't have that in it for each other. And that's why, and that's another layer of texture that I'm watching through this Nuggets, through this run.
And when you are in those places, you know, down in the depths there, you need that spark, you know, whether it's a, you know, veteran leader, bringing somebody together, somebody making the kind of sacrificial hustle play that gets everybody kind of snaps them out of it and locked in. And you do wonder a little bit where that comes from. It feels like Bruce Brown was the kind of guy who had that kind of energy last season. Christian Brown has made some of those plays over the course of the season, you know, big dunks, big hustle plays. Peyton Watson obviously has been electric in moments. It does feel a little bit like they're not getting either because Malone might not fully trust them at this point in the season, or they just haven't been as productive in the moments that they've gotten. It does feel a little bit like you're unsure where that jolt is going to come from. But it's got to come from somewhere. Before we put the button on just how rough this was, let's wallow around in it. And I apologize.
Yeah, let's do it. That's what I love.
In Game 2, the Nuggets scored 80 points. That is the fewest they have scored in any game since Game 7 of the first round in the 2020 bubble, the 80-78 rock fight against the Jazz. 34.9% from the field, second worst shooting night of the season, back the November 24th loss to the Nuggets in the in-season tournament. They had 19 turnovers against 16 assists, which is the first time Denver has had more turnovers than assists since February 5th, 2023, in a loss against, you guessed it, the Minnesota Timberwolves. This is a matchup that is particularly challenging for them. Maybe the wildest thing about it, Denver's offensive rating in that last game, 89.4, according to Cleaning the Glass, only the 6th stingiest defensive game of the season for the Wolves. So they are capable of this. They're doing
That's
it
crazy.
I know, right? Imagine having five tougher defensive performances than that in the course of the season. Wow. And doing it without Gobert. Pretty wild. I would say the flip side of this you now look at it and say there's maybe blessedly, I don't know, maybe it gives, you know, some opportunity to kind of rediscover things. A 3-day break here because the series started early. So there's 3 days before the resumption in Minnesota for game 3. If there is something that you would hope to get, you know, addressed, what's job one in terms of trying to, you know, the journey of a million miles starts with one single step, right? So like, what's one step you would be hopeful that they could take between now and Friday?
I know this is a cop-out answer. First of all, there's so many steps that they have to take that any one's not going to do it.
Sure.
But if I had to whittle it down to one, it's fight. Because again, the Nuggets got – Michael Malone stormed out on the court. The game was a 3-point game. He storms out and gets in Mark Davis's face. And you think, okay, is he trying to fire up the team? Is he really just mad at Mark Davis, what have you? Part of me thinks that he was just upset and lost himself. Murray was jawing at the officials all night. There's part of me that goes, Denver had a giant task at hand, and rather than focus on it, they got so distracted with their emotions and with everything else. So if you ask, what's one thing that can happen in game 3? I just want to see Denver play like champions. Competitive. Focused, not distracted by, oh, am I getting calls? Is this happening my way? Is they're being so physical? The game's being called or not being called, no whistles. We're upset about it. I just want to see the Nuggets go out there and say, we have to compete for 48 minutes. And right now, they don't look like a team that's inspired to do that. And that's what's so concerning about it. So forget the tactical stuff. And by the way, Gobert being a late scratch, this is, you don't lose by 40 points, whatever Denver lost by or got behind by. It's not one thing. So I'm, again, not making an excuse. Denver, after game 1, had adjustments that were all about Gobert, in my opinion. How do we attack him? When he's a late scratch, I do wonder if you just spent 48 hours preparing for a scenario that's not coming your way, and all of a sudden it's like, well, now what? And you get knocked out. So there's an element of that. But nonetheless, none of those adjustments, none of those details, none of that stuff matters if you don't want it as bad as the other team. They clearly want this. There's an excitement to it. And with Denver, I just want to see that excitement in game 3.
It's funny that you mentioned that. That was something after, as I said, I was covering Knicks Pacers last night. And after the controversial ending to that game and a couple of, you know, rough calls going against the Pacers in the final minute there, you know, the conspiracies, you know, afoot in New York yet again. Miles Turner, during his post-game press conference, was asked, you know, like, what's the number one thing you guys need to work on at your next practice today? And his said the same kind of thing you're talking about, like emotion is going to be a big thing. Yeah. You know, we lost our first game in Milwaukee and it was kind of like you could hear a pin drop the next day. I don't anticipate that being our morale or what our team's going to be about tomorrow, but emotion is big, you know, controlling the controllable things because you can't worry about the other stuff. And that's, you know, you would expect more from a team that has been through the battles that Denver has, but it's also, I guess I'm interested in your perspective on this, because I think one response that we saw a lot in these first couple of games is this is the first time Denver's had to deal with adversity, really, in the last 2 years. Do you feel, I was going to say, my guess is that having seen them up close, that doesn't quite hit your ear right.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much revisionist history. Here's the first thing. Every year is a little bit different. You can't say that team last year and then say they're the exact same. That being said, there are some pieces of it that are the same, some major pieces, including Murray Jokic. This team came back from 3-1 twice in one playoffs. This team trailed by double digits 4 times in the first round and won in 5 games. They have shown a resiliency. There's something in them that has some of that to them. So I think that there is a little bit of a, they've never had hit adversity or this or that. And I go, come on, guys. Like, last year, they earned that. They were down 15 points at halftime in game 4 of the Lakers series last year. That's adversity. And they stormed back and won it, you know, at the buzzer. So Denver has been resilient with this core group of players, with this more or less the same team. And even if you just go back one round, Denver was a bend but don't break team in the first round. This is the first that a team has kind of exposed their weaknesses, you know, to this degree. And Denver does seem to be fraying, but I think it has less to do about their, you know, character and what they were last year or years past or this or that. And I think it has more to do with it's a team that might have expired. And you never know when a team expires until it happens. But that's the thing I keep thinking about today is that ride over? And I'm not saying Jokic's era is over, Murray's era, whatever it is. But something about this team where we felt like, okay, it's a team and you're just going to make these little tweaks every year. You're going to change Bruce Brown for Christian Brown and this or that and that. It might be like, no, that core might have just expired, not because they're not good enough, but because sometimes teams just run out of time and it gets stale.
especially just, I mean, the accelerated pace of the NBA and playing like multiple long seasons back to back. And when you are so heavily reliant on that, I mean, it's the flip side of that's the best five man lineup in the league, right? Is that like so much weighs on their shoulders. And, you know, the book has been, you know, you understand the Nuggets are going to beat you in the Jokic minutes, and then you've got to stay afloat outside of them. And then like when the counter punch hits, or there's, you know, the uppercut surprises you and you're losing the Jokic minutes, which they are in this series for, I don't remember the last time the Nuggets regularly lost Jokic minutes. It sort of puts everything else under such great strain. And we're not there yet, and we don't have to get any further down that line, but you look at the salary structure here, and it's like Murray extension eligible, Porter extension eligible, Gordon extension eligible, KCP with a player option can make a decision. Like there are some pivot points here. And I think Calvin Booth to some degree saw that, you know, maybe not saw that part, but like it was part of the idea of we need to turn the roster over, get younger. We're going to lean, and rather than looking to bring back Bruce Brown at that price point or look to replace so many of those guys with veteran free agents, it's we're going to turn to Christian Brown. We're going to turn to Peyton Watson, see what Julian Strother can give us, those first round draft picks they made last year. Those deposits are not paying off right now. And sometimes you can get kind of caught in the in-between in that pocket. And it does feel a little bit like whatever that external source of, you know, rejuvenation or refreshing right. The pot, it just not hitting right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, Denver is in that scenario where they have a very expensive starting five. So if you're going to keep that core together, you're always going to have rookies and vet minimums. That's just, you start from there. Calvin Booth had a vision of we're going to get young. And a lot of he's not the first guy to have this. The Golden State Warriors waded into these waters and you know, hurt themselves. But the whole, we're going to keep our core together, but we're also going to develop behind it. And if we thread that needle perfectly, we keep this window open. The problem is, I'm not sure Michael Malone shared that vision. And the way this year has played out, you have to have synergy between your head coach, your front office, your ownership, and your best players. If any of those guys are not in lockstep on the plan, you're going to at some point, you're going to find phrase. Well, you draft three rookies. Julian Strother barely plays. Jalen Pickett did not play at all. Hunter Tyson did not play at all. So the plan of we're going to develop young, those guys did not develop. And then you had Peyton Watson this year who played a decent amount but is not playing in these playoffs. Justin Holiday was brought in to be a reserve, like an 11th, 12th guy, break glass in case of emergency. He's playing heavy minutes in the series.
Yeah, he's guarding Anthony Edwards, which is not, I think, not the way you drew it up.
I don't think Calvin Booth's vision was, hey, we're going to get to the playoffs and we'll just throw Holiday on an all-star MVP caliber player. So to me, this is signs, and I don't want to do too much of a post-mortem before the Nuggets end, because we'll look like idiots if the Nuggets do find a way to shock us all. But I do look at it to how this season has unfolded, and I think Calvin gave him young guys and said, forget about the regular season. Get those guys ready for the playoffs. Malone said, no, thank you. What a franchise record 57 wins by pushing his foot on the gas the whole game. Reggie Jackson, one of the oldest players on the team, played all 82 games this year. Like, how many teams would play their oldest player every single game, especially when he's such a bit player like Reggie? You could buy him 10 games off throughout the course of the season and play, use those games as an excuse to play your young guys. So I look at it and I go, I don't know that they were on the same page coming into the year. And that bill is sort as one of the pieces that seems to be coming due in this playoffs.
Well, I don't quite know where to go from there. Actually, I do want to ask this. Getting that up close and personal look at Ant these last couple of games, what have been your takeaways just from watching him now versus where, you know, where he was, I don't know, a few months ago, last year, et cetera?
So I have such a different take on, like, everybody loves player rankings. And I always think that they are so ridiculous because they don't make sense. They literally don't make logical sense. But you can have these fun, logical arguments inside of them. Here's how I think about him. His talent was great. It was great last year. It is great this year, and it is improving because his size and speed and athleticism and skill level is so rare. You don't get that combination of all of those pieces very often. So to me, he's very capable of being as good of an MVP player as there is in the league. The question, though, but there's so many of those guys. Joel Embiid's one of those guys. Like, there's so many of those guys out there. The difference is, what effect do they have on your team? And a lot of that is basketball questions. What effect do they have? But some of them are character questions. They're personality questions. And you watch this playoffs, he's always been charismatic at the podium. But it's the things he's saying that are like, Anthony Edwards is doing what a coach usually does. He goes to the podium and he sets the narrative every single day. And he says, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. This is what Carl, they'll ask Karl-Anthony Towns a question. He'll answer it. This is who Carl is. Like, he'll tell you. He's doing all of it in a way, and it's natural. I don't think he's thinking through this stuff. It's natural. So not only does he have the talent, he's competitive every game. There's a reason they swept the Suns. To sweep a team, you have to be focused even when there's no reason to be focused. They were focused because he's focused. They're competitive because he's competitive. They're tough because he is tough. And he has the talent to back it up. So to me, I look at him and I go, he is a special talent, but there's a lot of special talent in the NBA. But he's a special person, I think. Like a special, I'm not saying a good person or bad person, a special leader in this arena. And he's so much of an outlier. He's not just good at it. He appears to be great at this. And that is the thing that I think separates him from even your Jason Tatums and so many of your other great players. He's different in a class of his own.
It struck me, you know, you mentioned, you compared him to a coach. Like, I forget which question it was last night after the game, but he was like, and now I'm just going to take a quick shout out for Jaden McDaniels. Like, I'm going to pivot completely away from what you asked me to answer what I want to answer, because I'm sending a message to my guys. And yeah, he's 22 years old. Like, to have that, those fingertips for what, you know, what keeps everybody going, what keeps the plate spinning and keeps everybody churning is wild. So the Nuggets.
And by the way, Dan, he was right about Jaden McDaniels, because sometimes guys will try to do that, but it's so clearly false. You know, like, you know, even the one where he said Karl-Anthony Towns is our best offensive player. I mean, I listen to that one and I go, all right, it's a little on the, you're overdoing it. Scale it back 10% here. You're playing the hand too hard. But his point about Jaden McDaniels was the right point. He said, guys, Jaden McDaniels plus 23 tonight or whatever, game high plus 33, whatever it was. He didn't even mention that, but he just said Jaden McDaniels only got 7 shots. And yet he did. He was the key of the game. That's such a great point, that he just has his finger on the pulse of what the team needs, what the players need, but also what is right and true. And I'm just so impressed with it.
It goes back to, I mean, to something that Chris Finch said. You know, Chris Finch, we forget their coach is playing through a patellar, you know, torn patellar tendon. Right. But he was at the podium after last night's game, and he said, quote, the goal has always been to put out a team that people like to cheer for. Unless you play hard. Usually doesn't happen unless you play defense and share the ball. We're doing all of those things right now. And you're sort of seeing that harmonic convergence and the rising tide lifting all boats. You know, the Nuggets have been capable of that in the past. It is a level they are going to have to reach to get back into this series. And we will keep a close eye on that over the next few days before game 3 and see if the tide can turn in Denver's favor back in Minnesota. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will come right back with the closing 5. Stay tuned for some more Divine Intervention. Welcome back to Divine Intervention. My guest is Adam Mares of DNVR Sports. And we're going to wrap up with something that we call the closing 5, because Adam, as I'm sure you know, how you start, not nearly as important as how you finish. 5 questions for our illustrious guest. Here we go. On this show, we try to emphasize the importance of taking care of yourself in times of stress, which this clearly is. Ball is not life, contrary to popular belief. So, Adam, what do you do to get away from all this? What constitutes self-care for you?
Well, the truth is, I work like a dog, so not much. But I have a great family. I have a great life out here in Colorado. And I will say, man, I took a phenomenal scooter ride. Is scootering a big thing, Dan, out in the East Coast with you?
There are a lot of people on scooters, sort of like the electric scooters, right? Yeah, it has risen. The bike paths or bike lanes on the side of the other street have become more populated by electric scooters. Yeah.
I had an all-time scooter ride just this very Sunday. And I have to tell you about it because it was so good. It was right at sunset here in Colorado. It was probably 70 degrees with a cool, 70 degrees with a nice little breeze. Sun was setting. I saw a bird that I hadn't seen all year, the Western Kingbird, or it was the first time spotting it of the year, which is always a big thing. It was a phenomenally perfect hour that I just scooted around, you know, the front range of the Rocky Mountains. So that's how I get away. I remember thinking in that moment, I was like, is this the most relaxed I'm going to be at any point this year? I think it was. And so that's how I unwind.
That's incredible. And I'm glad you were present enough to lock into that thought in the moment. Let's sort of take that mental snapshot, hang on to it. I have to ask you a sub question. You saw a bird, you hadn't seen it. Are you a big bird watcher?
Yeah. I'm a big birder. I'm really just like animals. So I like going to like looking at wildlife and being in nature. But the best way you can do that in the city is to, you know, take stock of birds. So I'm very attuned to what birds are arriving at what time and in my neck of the woods.
Who we got to keep an eye out for now? Who's coming down the pike birdwise?
Well, some of my friends have spotted the Bullock's Orioles. So I know that they have arrived. They usually come here in the early parts of May, but I have not seen one yet.
Well, you know, hope springs eternal. And we got to get you hooked up with Ben Golliver from the Washington Post. And maybe you guys go on a moose safari together. Ben was very adamant about the values of the moose safari trying to get going. I believe it was the Arctic Circle, might have been Alaska. I forget where, but Okay. Maybe you guys can link up in the off season. Question number two. You get to take one nugget from all of Nuggets history to add into the team midstream and try to shake up the vibes before game three. Who are you taking?
My answer to this is usually David Thompson, just because he's like a legend to me. He's like Paul Bunyan or something. Sure. You know, like there's just like he's like a bit larger than life. But I think my actual answer, given the state of affairs for the Nuggets, would be Chauncey Billups, probably the greatest Nugget leader. Our leader in Nuggets history, and the Nuggets look like they need leadership right now. Not lost, Dan. I don't usually watch the pressers. Last night, Michael Malone had a very interesting one line. He said, "That's a very quiet locker room in there, and you can take that multiple ways," which means obviously nobody's talking, you know, everybody's sad and somber, but also there's no leader stepping up right now in that moment. And look, for all of Jokic's, we just talked about Anthony Edwards, how he has that component of it on top of the skill. For all of Jokic's greatness, he leads by example. The team plays unselfishly because he sets that tone. But he doesn't step up in other ways as a leader. It's just not natural to him, and he doesn't seem bothered to try to do something unnatural to him. But Chauncey Billups was a leader. I think the Nuggets need one in this moment, so I would add him.
I love that. Maybe you can just call Portland. They might be able to. They might let you borrow them, like a library loan or something like that for the next couple of weeks.
Quick trade.
I think a lot of sports fans who love sitcoms and have a relationship to alcohol have probably considered opening a sports bar, but you guys actually did it. How has the reality of having your own sports bar, which again, the DNVR bar, corner of Colfax and York, check it out if you're in town. How has the reality of having your own sports bar matched up with the way you might have envisioned it?
It's harder. That's for sure. Like, it's definitely harder. The thing about our bar, and look, we have a lot of great people that are running it. You know, I'm really just there. Like, I'm not involved too much in the operations of it, but
the pretty face of the bar.
I'm the pretty face of it, man. I kiss babies and shake hands. The cool thing about it is that as our life becomes increasingly online and digital and virtual, the DNVR bar is such a unique place where you go there to meet your digital friends. And there's nowhere else in the world that's like, Summer League is a little bit like this for the for the NBA writers that go to Summer League. You have that experience of, wow, I talk to you guys every day, but I never see you, and now I'm seeing you. That's what the DNVR bar is. There's all these people that you have this online relationship that is really cool and fulfilling in a lot of ways, but unsatisfying in some that you don't really realize until you're isolated from people for long periods of time. The DNVR bar feels like the, do you ever see, what is that movie? Or the Black Mirror episode, San Junipero, where people would go to this like digital heaven to hang out, right? And be this place. It's almost like that's the internet and then everyone leaves. This is like a real life example of that, where it's like, okay, we can go be online friends, but let's actually meet in real life to get that tangible, fully satisfying experience from time to time. And if we get to watch the Nuggets win along the way, it makes it all the more special.
That's really, it's fascinating. I was talking with Trey Kirby, was on the show last week from No Dunks, and we talked about that, like the difference between audience and community, right? Yeah. And like a lot of our lives, especially in this line of work, is like building a following, right? And trying to like get people to consume what you write, listen to what you make, watch what you make. But you lack sometimes community, actual like getting together, experiencing something together. So that makes a ton of sense. I hadn't even really thought about it like that. I was like, oh, it's just maybe a diversified revenue stream or whatever. But like that, the idea of having a place where you bring this community that you've built online together and actually like foster that sense of community, such a cool thing. Super producer John Gennaro notes in our side chat that a divine intervention bar would be so sad. but the music would be good. So, all right. Well, you know, there's worse things than that.
What are we serving at the Divine Intervention Bar? Like, what do you go there to get?
Peanuts and sadness. No, my honest answer to that is probably I am a cheap beer drinker by trade. Well, not by trade. It's not. I don't get paid for it. But I'm a like Miller High Life Narragansett guy. That's kind of my like Narragansett tall boy. There was a time where it would have been like Narragansett tall boy and a Jameson. Jameson's out of the recipe now. You know, that's off the books. Moving on. question number four. One of the coolest things you guys have done at DNVR, you visited Serbia in the summer of 2022, trying to learn a little bit more about Jokic and where he comes from. And you produced a really cool documentary about him and about Serbian basketball called 100 Invisible Threads, which folks can check out on the DNVR Sports YouTube channel. What's your favorite memory from that trip, from being in Serbia itself?
Man, I mean, the singular memory was in that game. So we fly out there for an entire week. We do this whole tour of the country and talk to people, just having an unbelievable experience. But it culminated with a game that was a must-win game for Serbia against Greece. So Jokic versus Giannis, and it was a qualifier for the World Cup that took place last summer. And that game was so intense. The theatrics of being in that arena. First of all, this is one of my favorite stories. The media in Serbia cheers for the team. Which, you know what? Can we adopt this in the U.S.? I'm sick of the decorum of having to sit at your, everybody playing their part. The Serbs and the Greek reporters as well just screamed the entire time as if they were a drunk fan. It's unbelievable and honestly added to the absurdity of the entire experience there. But Jokic hit a Sambor shuffle in the corner over Giannis, a turnaround Sambor shuffle, and it was basically to win the game. And it was the single greatest sporting event, I think, imaginable. I actually don't think it can be greater than that. So I'm not looking for anything that will be greater than that. It was unbelievable. And that was the single moment. But the real answer is sports connecting people that you didn't expect is such a cool experience. I never thought I would go to Serbia.
Sure.
Like Serbia was not on my short list of countries to visit. I didn't think I would be ingrained in Serbian history and culture and learn all these different things, or curious to learn all these different things. So being out there and meeting all these people that we've connected with so deeply and forming these friendships, to me, you go like, wow, all because we watched this one guy play basketball that all of this stuff has happened. That was the best part.
That's really, really cool. I have to note, I'm pretty sure earlier when you said that there was a somber feeling, you said it was a Sambor feeling. So I feel like there's a chance that even if within a moment of sadness, you found some joy, maybe unbeknownst to you. It's so deeply probably ingrained in you now.
It's true.
So we've got to love that. That's tremendous. And I would heartily recommend anybody check out we're not at the recommendations yet. We'll get there. But 100 Invisible Threads on the DNVR Sports YouTube channel. Question five, which will lead on this. When we were trying to coordinate this get together, we were first doing it via DM. Before you told me that other forms of communication might be better because, quote, I try to limit Twitter. on a night like last night, are you able to stick with that? Or are you, like many of us sick freaks, do you have that compulsion to like feel the stove, even though you know it's hot on a night like last night?
I mean, everybody has that compulsion. Honestly, I think it's one of the things like our brains are not wired for the internet, right? Like our brains are wired for foraging and like different things. And so now we have Twitter and our brains are like, I have no idea how to make sense of this.
I just want to go check out the Oriole.
Yeah, exactly. We're supposed to be bird watching, not Twittering. Yeah, like last night, I just immediately mute everything. Like I put a tweet out and I just mute it.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, look, I like that people bring me their emotions. That's part of being a community leader. You know, like we talked about community. That's, we're not just podcast hosts. I'm trying to build community. Part of that is I have to accept a lot of people's emotions. You know, like they're going to bring them to me when they're good. They're going to bring them to me when I'm bad. And that comes with the gig. But there are times when in our line of work, you do something on YouTube, you're going to get comments. People are going to call you every type of name and stuff. And I do think that no matter how strong you are as a person, still you want to be careful what you're feeding your mind, what you're feeding your soul.
Yeah.
You don't want to feed yourself a steady diet. So nights like last night was easy for me. There are times it's hard for me, but nights like last night was, you know what? People are probably going to be in their emotions a lot. I don't really need the feedback. I kind of know what people are going to think of these opinions. So I can just guess what kind of feedback was coming in. And I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen anything from any of my shows. I haven't seen anything from Twitter.
Tremendous work. You open the fridge, you see that the milk was expired a month ago. You don't have to drink it, right? Like you can.
I've never had that compulsion.
Yeah, you can make the decision. Like I know what's going to happen here if I open this, and I don't need to do it. Well, I mean, a weekly recommendation of just doing that, not feeding your soul garbage, would be enough. But we're going to add on to it. Last thing we do on Divine Intervention is a weekly recommendation. Does not have to be about basketball. Can be about anything in our great wide world. Past examples have included going to the library, eating popsicles, cooking dinner for somebody to show them you love them, all manner of TV shows and books and music and movies, something that you think is cool and good that you would recommend to the people. So, Adam Mares, do you have a weekly recommendation for the folks?
It's not like a weekly recommendation because it's kind of funny to think of this being a weekly thing. The only thing I thought of was, you know, my wife and kids were out of town for the last like 4 or 5 days, and I have a 7-year-old and 9-year-old, two daughters. It's unbelievable. I miss them so much. And I always talk to young people like, yeah, I'm 40. I'm not young anymore, even though I refer to myself that way. But I always talk to people my age and below. And there's this sense of like, are kids worth it? Are kids this or that? And I always go, kids are the single greatest thing that you can have. That's such an unoverwhelming experience when you have kids. It like makes you think about the world. It makes you see the world in different ways. And then the Nuggets, you know, they go 0-2 over these last days. I just miss my kids, man. And like seeing them and being around them, it's one of those things where you come home or you see them in the morning and it's like, you know, you just had this horrible loss. But to them, it's just Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's like, oh, that's right. So that would be my advice. It's not a weekly advice, but
nope,
kids are the best, man.
We're framing that as recommendation. Kids. I love it. Kids. I need it.
I recommend them.
We're also in very similar boat. I didn't realize the ages were so close. Yeah, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, same deal. Yeah. And so I get done last night filing in the sort of middle of the night and getting ready to go to bed. And I'm remembering, oh, the 9-year-old has like a state test today, organized math test, whatever. I forget the name of the actual thing, but she has a math test this morning that's like a big deal they've been working on toward all year. So I'm like, I'm not going to see her in the morning because my wife is very kind and is going to like get them at the door in the morning after I've worked through the middle of the night. So I'm like, let me write her just a little note and say, you know, like you're going to do great. You know, like you're ready for this. You're smart. You're capable. You're talented, whatever. I love you. And I come in and I go to bed. And then as soon as my head hits the pillow, I was like, there's two of them. If the little one sees that the big one has a special note from daddy and the little one doesn't, she's going to be pretty pissed off. So it's like, let me get out of bed and go over and be like, and I think I literally wrote like, I didn't want you to see that she had a note and you didn't. I also think you are smart and capable and I love you very much and I will see you. And
so, smart move, man. That was smart.
Thankfully I had my wits enough about me after writing too much about the Knicks and the Pacers, but then I wake up this morning and see my wife and I'm like, did they like the notes? She's like, they don't care about this. Yeah, sure. The notes were fine. I was like, but you know, if you scratch that itch for yourself,
totally.
If nothing else. It's so funny because my recommendation is also not a like, here is a piece of content to consume. The literal way I wrote it down here in our rundown is making little faces at a baby. So I mentioned earlier, I was out of town this weekend with family and friends. So it was one of my wife's oldest friends from growing up. A few of them got together. There was a new baby that I had not seen. And my kids are bigger now, so I don't often make faces at them in the same way. Making faces at a baby, top notch. Can't recommend it enough because you make little faces, you blow your cheeks out, you bug your eyes out, you make little noises, and the baby loses its mind every time. That is my Dan Devine promise to you. I believe I've made a joke about this on Twitter. It's not a joke. If you got a little baby, I'm playing games. I'm making faces. I'm making little noises. I'm blowing raspberries. Yeah. I'm doing whatever needs to happen. Because when I get that baby, this is like my need. If I get that baby to like me, I know.
This is so funny. It's so true. When you're on a plane or something and there's the baby that peeks over and you make the face and he loves it, it's like, heck yeah. It's almost like you're a stand-up comedian or something. You know, you might as well be the funniest guy on earth. You're like, I still got it.
Well, Adam, you might have put your finger directly on the bruise. Like, you don't have the guts to do stand-up comedy, but you can make faces at a baby. So that is our recommendation. Kids making faces at babies. What a wonderful source of joy. What a wonderful time to have with Adam Mares here. I also recommend checking out DNVR Sports at thednvr.com. Written coverage podcasts for every team in Denver. Not we talk obviously about the Nuggets, but all across the sporting landscape. Die hard work there from a super committed and super talented group of people. And listen to Adam with Tim Legler on the All-City NBA podcast. Adam, anything else you'd like to point people toward on your way out the door?
That's it, man. I appreciate it. Hopefully the Nuggets show us some fight. Or I'll take an early vacation, one of the two.
There you go. Right. We got to remember our byline is not where our worth is centered on. So, you know, we'll find our way one way or the other. But that's going to do it for this episode of Divine Intervention. I want to say thanks so much to Adam Mares for taking all this time to be with us. Thank you so much to super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things that he does to make this show look and sound great. Vinny Goodwill will be back with a new episode of The Good Word tomorrow. And Jake Fisher and I will be back with No Cap Room on Thursday. I think that's about it. Thank you so much for listening. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.